to the Lockdown Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, Doc Rivers was talking about the Lakers, and
I already hate it.
Me too. As soon as I saw, like, in a tweet, Doc Rivers, Kawhi, Lakers, Clippers, I was just like, you know what? I don't like this.
There's a lot to dislike here, yeah.
There's no way this is going to end up sounding anywhere close to decent and like, going to put me in, like, anything close to a good mood. And, hey, spoiler alert, it didn't. Look at that. We're going to talk about that in the second segment. What I find most interesting in today's Kawhi Leonard and the Lakers and Clippers. And then finally in the third segment, we have a couple questions to get us all caught up on heading into the weekend. I found the Draymond Green, basically, I'm paraphrasing here, basically said that LeBron's greatest achievement has been the way that he's empowered players. And it's been kind of funny. The NFL, you know, you have the Antonio Brown situation. You have Jalen Ramsey is now trying to force his way out of Jacksonville. You have these situations where the players are feeling similarly empowered. And it's been funny to see the Neanderthals who are in like, who operate within the NFL sphere kind of say, oh, the NFL is turning into the NBA. The NFL, this can't be good. And they mean it pejoratively, but I don't think it's at all pejorative. I think it's a good thing. But what do you make of Draymond Green's comments here on? I'll just read it verbatim since I have it in front of me. Green, it has a lot of people talking, and obviously that's a huge and large credit to LeBron James talking about empowerment. You know, with what he's done in his career, and that's kind of shown everybody else the power that you have as a player, and that's why you saw the movement this year, because the basketball players have taken control of their own future. We've taken the control of our destiny, and I think a lot of people hate that, but I think that's one of, you know, everybody celebrates LeBron for his basketball career and the things he's done or he's been able to accomplish. I think the doors he's opened for athletes and especially basketball players is his biggest accomplishment. My main takeaway, and I got into some of this with Harrison on the Silver Screen and Roll Pod, my main takeaway when I heard this, and whenever I hear athlete empowerment, I find myself, I would like to tweak the title of it. I'd like to say superstar athlete empowerment, because, like, that's the people who are controlling their destiny now. And as a result of them controlling their destiny, it does kind of hurt their fellow athlete to a certain extent. But what do you think of Draymond Green's comments? What do you think of my takeaway from it? Like, this entire situation, we can just laugh at the NFL because they're all idiots. But we can. This is interesting to hear athletes actually seize control here a little bit.
I mean, I think Draymond's, I largely agree with Draymond. Like, you know, it's kind of an apples and oranges comparison to be like, is this more significant, or, you know, four MVPs versus, you know, on the court versus that type of thing. It's just not the same thing. But I think
this
to Draymond's point,
a lot more lasting than the MVPs and titles.
LeBron's impact will be felt long after he's retired. That's right. And your point about it being superstar athletes is valid, and it not necessarily trickling down, but those are, you know, like, that's always going to be the case for a change. You have to be powerful enough to facilitate change, and that's the main thing here, is that the players have always been the most difficult component of this to replace. If you put an NBA team up for sale, there, you know, there's a line of billionaires lined up to buy them, right? Because it's a good investment slash it's fun. A lot of these folks, that's their kind of play thing. That's their fantasy team for billionaires, right? It's an actual team, right? Someday, Anthony, let's keep growing Locked On. We'll buy the Lakers someday. It has to come from those superstar athletes, because they're the ones that you just can't replace. They're the least replaceable, and that's always been the case. And the idea of them being dictated to because someone else signs their paycheck, well, it's because those checks are there because the demand is there. And the demand is there is not to watch the coach, not to watch the GM, not to watch the owner, or anybody who's supposedly above them on the food chain to me, this is a market correction. These are the people who should be on top and wielding the most power, finally actually wielding the most power. My one gripe with it, and it by no means is something that should negate the rest of it. It just makes me, it's a little bittersweet in that it facilitates a lot more player movement. And I think in a sport like basketball, there's on-court value in a team being together for 5 years, right? Like the same core group of guys. And that's going to happen less and less as players are more empowered and searching for the best deal. But go get it. Like that's, and hell, the Lakers stand to benefit from that. If this continues in that way, the one thing the Lakers have to offer, no matter how well or poorly run the organization is the brand equity and the ability to, if Anthony Davis is going to be more popular for being the same player that he was because he's on the Lakers rather than the Pelicans, and then it becomes this global international type of thing. When players are looking around for where do I sign, and you've got these max contracts in place that where there's no real difference in the amount of money they're going to be getting in terms of salary, well, where will they be looking for advantages? And the Lakers have a lot of great selling points. So this new era should be beneficial to the Lakers. I do wish that, you know, teams would stay together a little longer just from a basketball
I think purity generally standpoint. Speaking,
but all in all, I really, you know,
you
love
go
to see
down
what the
a real slippery or a real tricky road if you start to try to make the argument that this isn't a net positive thing, that the that the athletes have been empowered, right? This is a net positive. It's a good thing for everybody involved. The people who have a problem with it are the people who, it's weird, we do the weirdest thing in sports, especially where the vast majority of people who are watching their favorite team on any given day, on any given night, whenever it is, the vast majority of those people are not in, you know, administrators at their place of work, right? They're workers. The vast, that's just said, like numerically speaking, most people, even listening to this podcast, are workers in a workforce who have a boss. We are. We are. Shouts to David.
I mean, and in some ways, you know, we're that too, but, right? Like, we are.
It's weird, though, that people who are workers find themselves rooting for administrators. When if NBA players were to just for some reason take an interest in podcasters, right, it would be like, it would be weird if they turned around and were like, go David, go, right, and not root for their fellow worker. And when you get into these conversations of empowerment and the word that gets thrown around a lot is entitlement, right? That's the word that as soon as I hear that, I go, Oh, all right. We're starting to get to how you actually feel about this subject. And what it starts turning into is people of color with power is not something that people are usually used to in this country. And so they look at the owners and they look at executives and they look at coaches who look like the people who have historically held power in this country, and they're more comfortable with those people holding power. And I find it interesting that we haven't quite been able to break away completely from, no, we should be rooting for the worker to have power in the situation because they are the product. They are what we tune in to watch is the workforce. You know what? This topic is way too fascinating for about 6 minutes of just talking back and forth about it. So you know what? Let's just hang tight. Take a quick second, pay a couple bills. When we come back, we're going to keep on talking about what I think is one of the more fascinating topics in all sports.
I'm not even sure that that mentality, and I try not to speak too authoritatively on mentalities that I don't share, but I'm not even sure that that mentality gets to those same levels of consideration, meaning that, like, what are sports to most people? What are the Lakers to most people? How do they fit in their life? It's a bit of entertainment. It's something that, it's an escape, and you want your team. Your team is who you root for, right? We are Laker fans, and we see that workforce that you're talking about come and go, right? Like, I loved Lonzo. I was rooting for him, and he's gone now. right? Am I? And now I have seen over the last few years kind of this new breed of fandom emerge where people follow players, but those are really mostly superstars. Mm-hmm. Occasionally someone like Lonzo will catch a fan base before he's earned it on the court, per se. But by and large, you're talking about people who will root for that particular player. But the vast majority of fans are fans of the team. So I think in most instances, the arguments against this sort of thing are really based in a, how is this going to affect my team? This is going to screw my team over. I wish that we had the old days where you could draft a guy. And bro, still, we don't even really question, like, guys are basically locked in for the first 7 years of their career in the NBA if they're any good. That's more than half of their career in most instances. So there is even in, you know, we always love to pat the NBA on the back. I think that kind of we can take that a little too far. Now, it's better than other sports in that respect. But the NBA has some ugliness to it in those respects as well. But I think in most instances, those I think you, you know, do the power dynamics. I think you're absolutely on the money with that. But I don't think.
I don't think anybody is sitting there saying, you know, go Genie, go. Like, how does this affect my team when it comes to conversations of player empowerment. It's just a, I think it's more of a subconscious thing that's like, what am I as a member of a populace that has seen historically this power system, how we've seen that go, I'm going to be subconsciously more comfortable with that. And the idea of flipping that on its head potentially is something that people can't quite wrap their head around. And yeah, I mean, if I were a fan of like the Milwaukee Bucks, I wouldn't want player empowerment, right? Because that means I'm losing Giannis. That means he's gone, right? He's gone.
Right.
You get it?
Right. Right. Which is funny because there's a, we are kind of dancing around modern political discussions of socialism and capitalism and frameworks like that. It's funny because in a free market, right?
Yeah.
In the idea of a free market, I won't get too deep into this because I know people ain't want to hear my thoughts on this too much, but in a true free market, like, Milwaukee shouldn't benefit from, like, you're asking for artificial mechanisms to be put
there
in place
be a salary
where
cap.
A true capitalist perspective, like, people are going to go to New York, people are going to go to LA. There wouldn't be a salary cap. Exactly. There wouldn't be a cap on max salaries. There wouldn't be a cap on what rookies make, right? These are all so-called socialist policies in the NBA where, but what's funny is that the people who generally, I feel like we should have like the, like Vladimir Lenin speeches faintly in the background
of this episode
or like the Russian communist, the people's, you know, anyway. Right. But what's funny is that the people who are generally against this player power movement are rooting for what are
it's
kind of these socialist policies that we'll rail against in other aspects, right? So it's we are and you know, on my side of things, we have plenty of hypocrisies and paradoxes too. We got a lot of crap in this country we need to have honest conversations about, and this may not be the podcast for that, and that's okay, but we need to start addressing those types of things. And this is an interesting format in which we can have these discussions, because we can start them from a base. So if any people can't tell, I'm fairly liberal. But if there's a conservative Lakers fan, I've had some of the most interesting political conversations I've had recently with conservative Lakers fans, because there is a baseline of, we have something in common, and there's a baseline of respect where we can talk to each other like human beings rather than the current paradigm of we've got the red team versus the blue team.
Yeah.
And we can't talk to each other like adults as a result of that.
I could talk about X's and O's and KCP's shot in his left arm compared to how most like good shooters have their left arm position and stuff like that. Like that's what I get paid to do. But this kind of stuff here, when we talk about societal stuff that creeps into our sports, that's the stuff. Because that's you. It's funny, whenever I hear somebody say keep politics out of my sports, I always say, well. That too, but sports especially has been a platform from which a lot of progress has been made, because these people who historically, you know, were the minority and haven't been cared about on a more human level If they are now in charge of my entertainment and the happiness that I draw from that entertainment, I'm now going to start caring about that person a little bit more. And if they offer me their point of view while I'm watching this sport, well, then that gives me the opportunity, like you said, if I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum there, that gives me the opportunity to have a conversation with somebody who is on the opposite end of the spectrum, because we have that shared thing in common that we're interested in. And yeah, I mean, I kind of roll my eyes when people, generally speaking, if you tell me to stick to sports on Twitter, you get blocked. But if somebody is telling, you know, an athlete, hey, stick, you know, to the shut up and dribble line, right? It's usually because you don't want that talking point to be made to people who might relate to the person making the point that is being made. So Laura Ingraham was the person who made that statement about LeBron, right? She's on the opposite end of the political spectrum from LeBron. And if LeBron is saying something on the opposite end of that spectrum that people on her side of the conversation don't want, or she doesn't want those people to hear, or even worse, relate to, well, then that hurts her political standing, right? And it's just a means by which to shut up the other end of the spectrum who do have things that they need to bring up occasionally. And like this player empowerment, this era of empowerment, as I mentioned at the very get-go here, I think it's still in its early stages where they haven't quite figured out how to make it actual general athlete empowerment, and it isn't superstar empowerment. You know, it's going to be interesting how that's handled. The other interesting dynamic here, as we're seeing it as a result of, I think, Woj and Zach Lowe today reported that Adam Silver and the rest of the owners are talking about locking down tampering stuff and leveling the playing field for, and I did air quotes there since you guys can't see me, leveling the playing field in free agency. Like, that's all a result of owners, I think, not being comfortable with this empowerment, because that shifts this whole dynamic on its head. And so it's going to be interesting to watch what the backlash to all of this is going to be, because this, think of everything like a pendulum. Right now, we see it swung way far out to the player side, right? Where they have it. Well, we In the NBA, I think
I don't think so. I don't agree with that. Well, but continue the point. I just wanted to say I don't agree with that.
Ways that it hasn't swung that way before. And it's going to be interesting to see how that swings back. Right next,
I do agree
next
with
CBA
that.
Conversation. Next time, next CBA negotiation. And by the way, like, there is no greater way to lose an audience than to talk about CBA stuff. So we'll jump off of this as quickly as possible. But next CBA negotiation, the owners are going to say, or governors, but because I think by that time they'll be referred to as governors. the governors are going to say, wait, we can't have that. Milwaukee is going to say, no, we want Giannis to stay. We don't want him to leave. And how best can we make that happen without actually addressing the things that might make Giannis want to leave in the first place, right? That's the other side of the conversation here, is how can we not be held accountable for the shortcomings of our organization, the way that I've handled my business, without you know, having anybody look behind the curtain as to how the businesses have actually been run. That's what's going to be interesting in this conversation that we're going to have here in the next few years.
The sports are interesting in that there's the antitrust element of it, where, you know, these leagues work because they are monopolies, right? Because there aren't 3-4 different NBAs competing against each other, right? And then what naturally happens is one becomes a little more powerful, eats the other ones up. NBA versus with the ABA. Mm-hmm. The NBA was created when you had the NBL, and then I think the BAA is what it was called. This is in the late 40s. And so all of these company mergers, and eventually you're one entity, right? But when you have one entity, that could be damaging to that monopoly. That can be damaging to workers, to the point where you can make whatever rules that you want.
Find another NBA.
Ability to set rules and just be like, hey, you know, if you don't like it, go somewhere else. You know, the find another NBA. And that's the point, is that there isn't another one. So you have to play by their rules. You have no power from the workers' side of things. You know, the politics of Colin Kaepernick and kneeling for the flag and all of that aside. And, you know, they had a settlement. Yeah. And so I these are complicated things that I really don't like to just be like, it's this and it's only this one thing that I say. That being said, a guy like Kaepernick does not have an alternative place to place his services, right? So that puts all of the power, and that's why we have antitrust laws. And there are antitrust exceptions for each of the major sports. But within that, if we're going to have a monopoly, you have to have some of those protections in place for the players, or else it becomes tremendously unfair where it's can't funny, be like, oh, I don't
now
like
the owners
here,
are
going
to so say, well, we need protections.
There is no viable
alternative. It's going to be fun. It's going to, like, this next CBA negotiation is going to be fun.
But the thing is that's what it's always been. These MFers in the last CBA argued that they were going broke, they're going so poor, they're losing money. It used to be a 57-43 split in favor of the players. The NBA Players Association has one of the stronger unions. Baseball is probably a little stronger in the NBA, but they lost 7%. So now it's a 50-50 with some leeway, 49-51, 51-49. But they lost about 7% of gross revenue. What happens right after they sign that? These MFers, huge. Not only that, the sales of the teams, the difference in what these teams are being sold for. The Nets just got sold.
MJ sold like Prokhorov, a part of the Bobcats.
You know how much money he made on that deal?
Amount of money.
Just buying. He bought the team. Bought the Nets. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, like, there's everybody's going to fight for their own interests. That's part of what this whole dance is. It's a story really as old as time that just keeps manifesting itself in different ways. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this next CBA is going to be interesting for sure, especially with decreasing TV revenue and with the NBA. Well, see, the NBA is as popular as ever. We're just not consuming it the same way that we used to. So, you know, like, the NBA is the most serious about pursuing sports gambling, and how do we monetize that? How do we make money off of people betting on our league? Yeah. For the first time in a major American sport, they're really exploring that. What does that look like? Are you going to be able to, like, from the, you know, the 300 seats, be like, yo, I bet AD scores 12 points in the second half. What's the over under on that? You know what I mean? And have something interactive at your chair to be able to gamble on that. And you know, the house is always going to win. They're always going to get their cut on that. Right.
When so what gambling is like
so
absolutely
we're entering
completely
a crazy
legalized and in the arena when the Lakers go up by, like, did you ever see the movie Semi-Pro? It's a great movie.
I did not.
But there's a scene there where he's
with it,
like,
know,
if they won by a certain amount, he had to give out like corn dogs to everybody in attendance. Right. And they had, like, it came down to, like, their last possession. All they had to do was, like, dribble out the clock. They didn't have to make a basket to win the game. It was just, and he, like, in the timeout, he goes, all right, guys, we need to win this game, but not by that much. And, like, their guy, Vakaitis, like, makes, like, a putback layup to go over, like, to cover the amount of points that they needed to win by in order to give out corn dogs to everybody in attendance. And he's like, God damn, he's just, like, livid, right? And I can't wait for, like, the first time in an arena where the Lakers win a game, but they win by, like, too little or too much. And, like, people are, like, walking out angry after the Lakers win. Oh, it's going to be great. That's going to be hilarious.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like, the Scott Van Pelt does that little sketch. I don't watch Sports Center that often anymore, but that's one of my favorite segments, are the bad beats, right? Where the outcome, you know, it's like a college football game and the line is like plus 16.5 and some team kicks like a field goal with 45 seconds left to put them up 17 instead of 14. Oh. And you've got all these gamblers that are just, and people listen to the show, if you gamble, you know these moments, right? But it's just like fantasy football, man. Why are people so invested in the NFL? A big portion of that is the popularity of fantasy football. So just getting different ways for people to be invested, you know, like, they're going to be watching games they wouldn't normally watch, right? Hey, all of a sudden, Milwaukee at Atlanta is a game you tune into because you got a little bit riding on it, right?
I can't wait. We'll go back. I want to talk about the Doc Rivers thing. I don't think we're going to have time to get to the mailbag, so we'll push those questions off to the Monday episode. But hang tight. When we come back, we're going to try to figure out what Doc's little story here might mean. All right, so this is from Doc, I believe, in a story with from Arash Markazi's of the LA Times article on, like, how, you know, kind of the behind the scenes look at Kawhi Leonard going to the Clippers and all of those things. Quote, "We had a meeting with Kawhi at my house in Malibu, and we felt we had the inside position," Rivers said. "The Lakers had a meeting with Kawhi, and they built this whole thing up for him to come to their new practice facility. And he said, 'No, you come to my hotel room.' But with us, he said, 'Yes, I'll come to your house.' When we heard that, it felt like he was telling us he wants to come here." One of the I guess retorts from Laker fans when they want to defend the Lakers, I guess, quote unquote, missing out on Kawhi and the process that they took in trying to sign Kawhi, is that, well, he was just a— it went, especially when they're trying to make it seem as if the Lakers didn't actually lose to the Clippers. It was that, well, Kawhi was just always going to be a Clipper. This would lend some credence to that, right?
I mean, to some extent. Yeah. He also said within that piece that, mm-hmm. you know, Kawhi told Ballmer to his face, "Your team is not good enough, and if you don't improve it, I will not come here." So I don't think it was quite the foregone conclusion. Now, I think it communicates that that was his preference, but, you know.
Like, if the Clippers was always Kawhi's preference, and he was just holding out as long as he could to give the Clippers enough time to make a Paul George trade, right? Could the Lakers have done anything more to protect themselves? Or could they have done more to sell him on, wait, why are you waiting for the Clippers again?
That it kind of felt like the battle was lost at that point, right? So there's the whole thing about the Clippers following Kawhi around for a year, and we can debate the merits of that. But mm-hmm. I want to bring it back into the idea of the Lakers being this family business that values family, that values relationships, that values loyalty, mm-hmm. all of the things that we criticize them on.
They wouldn't keep doing it if it wasn't
just like most things in life. There's a good side to it too, right? And that was something that Tim Harris had some interesting quotes. Tim Harris is the COO or the CFO. He's even one of the top four guys in the Lakers organization. He's been there for 100 years, basically. And he was talking about Jerry Buss's philosophy. And Jerry Buss was like, "We're in the people business, right?" And that's, you know, that's something a lot of people say. He elaborated on what that idea meant. But I want to drop back to that idea of, like, the Lakers are in the people business. The thing that startles me about this report from Arash Markazi is it sounds like the Lakers didn't know Kawhi very well. And that's something that, like, hey, we say Kawhi's kind of a weird dude. He's, you know, a little bit of an enigma. That's all fine and well. But the Clippers at least tried to get to know him. That may have had an impact on why the Clippers were preferred. But what the Lakers should have been doing is showing him that, like, selling that to him, selling the family to him, and doing that over the course of time, getting to know him, getting to know the people around him, the people that matter. And they, you know, were feeling very confident in their ability to get him at a certain period of time when that didn't match how he felt. And the only way that happens is if they don't know him and they don't know his feelings about them very well. And so that should be something that, if that is what we were about, and we do experience the negative effects of it, of not getting the best people because they aren't Lakers, but if that's what the route we're going to go down, let's show that we care more than anyone else. I know you hate the Kobe extension, but from a family business standpoint, and that we take care of people standpoint, that's one of the better things they've done that fits into that ethos. We can make a credible argument to LeBron 2 years from now, where we're in summer, he opts out of his contract, say, "Hey, take less money this year. Let us sign Giannis. We will pay you for the same way that we did to Kobe. We will give you a lot of money beyond the years in which your play on the court deserve it to make up for this. And you will be able to believe us because we've done that before." So I just want more of that.
So, like, you talk about the Kobe contract, right? The opposite side of that coin was the Clippers trading away Blake Griffin, like, months after they told him he was going to be the face of their franchise and their first statue and all of those things, right? Clipper for life, right? I think it was even a stupid little hashtag was Blake Griffin was going to be a Clipper for life.
Well, and they had him on a shirt with, like, freaking Gandhi.
They also traded
Martin Luther King and Albert Einstein.
They And look, you and I, we aren't privy to the details of these conversations, But you have to bring up, hey, here's the Clippers example of quote-unquote loyalty. Here's our example of quote-unquote loyalty. And which one do you think is actually closer to loyalty? Right? Like, how do you, and if that's like the basis of this conversation and trust, then that's a big deal. The other big deal when you're talking about trust here was how things went down with Magic. He felt like backstabbed. He said as much on ESPN. And if the main point of contact from Kawhi Leonard's camp to the Lakers was Magic Johnson, and this dude, it feels like he's having this conversation with Kawhi with a machete sticking out of his back, like, that's not going to go over very well in these conversations with Kawhi Leonard. And so, yeah, the tidbit here about, you know, Kawhi told the Lakers to come to him and he was willing to go to the Clippers. Like, that's cute and all. And that's the kind of thing that you would expect Doc Rivers to share. Right. But just in terms of what could the Lakers have done differently here, one thing that I think they'll always kind of wonder about is, what if we had had better conversations or communication with Magic? Like, how could we have avoided how that went down? Because, yeah, I think it's a net positive, Magic not being involved with the Lakers right now. I think they're in a better point now than they were when Magic was employed. But did the way that things went down there, did Rob Pelinka maintaining his standing within the organization after Magic Johnson accused him of backstabbing, did that hurt you in these conversations with Kawhi Leonard, right? Like you're saying, mm-hmm. if you're going to be this mom and pop mm-hmm. shop, you actually have to live up to those standards that you set yourself as mom and pop shop. And frankly, Rob Pelinka doesn't meet those standards. He's not Laker family, and he was treated above a Lakers icon.
The Lakers are somewhere between this, like, corporate brand and a mom and pop shop. And sometimes it's the worst of both worlds in its current iteration. Like, one of the things that I mean by that is we talked about this when we had Justin Russo on the pod to preview, you know, like a matchup against the Clippers, but that, like, reaching out into the community, the mom and pop shops that survive have loyal customers. Lord knows the Lakers have loyal customers. But part of that is being like, you are such a part of the community that when Walmart gets built across the street, you've got enough people.
Even
being
if
like,
it means I spend 15 cents more.
I'm not doing that. I'm going to the place I've been going to for 20 years. That's right. And explaining to your kids why that's important. Like, look, the Lakers aren't going to lose many of us older Laker fans, but I am concerned about the next generation in terms of what that looks like and how many of them are Clipper fans, because the Clippers are making more of an effort. Little things like, awesome. Like the, you know, Grant got the shout out the other day from LeBron, which I was just so thrilled by, right? For that Photoshop of the Crenshaw jersey. I hope this is, I've heard conflicting reports on, is this something that the Lakers are going to do next year? If it is, great. That's exactly the type of thing. Like, a guy like Nipsey Hussle was beloved in LA. Like, it's just a little shout out to your community being like, I care about you. I care about what's important to you. And I'm going to reflect that back to you. And like, we are a we, right? And I went to an LA Sparks game the other day, the first round playoff game, which is a single elimination. I'd never been to a WNBA game before. And the reason I went is because it was on Spectrum and people were having a blast. The game ops were great. They were playing, the DJ was, DJ Mosky is awesome, right? Yeah. And so he's playing like Poison and Bohemian Rhapsody. People, basically the crowd is all into it. It's this fun, like high school, college type of atmosphere to it. And I went to the game and that reflected it too, that both like the gameplay on the court, like basketball is basketball, right? And I love basketball, but the whole vibe around all of it was that we know we're this small community. We're never going to be the size of the NBA or anything like that. But there is something to love about it because it's that mom and pop thing. The Lakers are so stuffy in a lot of ways, bro. Going to like every game at Staples, it's the same thing over and over and over again, and it's lacking a heart and a soul to it. I lament. Like, that's the best part of a mom and pop place, is that you, when you walk in, they this, this, this and the Lakers are too big to where you know the name of every customer, but there are different ways to go about doing that. The thing is, the Lakers keep repeating, the Lakers are trying to be what they were in the 80s. So the same type of things, be it the Laker girls or halftime entertainment or the different ways they try to entertain the crowd, right. That shit was awesome in 1987. It's just not 1987 anymore. It's those things aren't awesome anymore. And there's no effort. It's more like, this is the way we've always done it, and this is how we're going to continue to do it. And it becomes very corporate, and that's not as fun. So just that lack of heart and soul, like, I want to see the Lakers have more of that. That is where Jeannie has talent, where yeah. she is not getting the most out
that's
of it.
That's a great point.
I want that, I want every, her fingerprint in that look, respect
we've talked
all
about
over the organization.
Kind of the negatives of Jeannie Buss quite a bit here, but the thing that you and I always hear when we hear Jeannie Buss described to us is she's the nicest human being alive. You never feel like she's a billionaire. She doesn't want anybody who she has any kind of interaction with mm-hmm. to feel like she's a billionaire. And she has that heart. She has that soul. And yeah, I agree. That's a great point, is to say imprint some of that heart and that soul into the organization. The other thing, I obviously didn't go to nearly as many Laker games as you mm-hmm. did last year, but it was funny. I took Jen to a game. We went to the game where the Lakers played the Nets. We saw them play the Brooklyn D'Angelo Russells, and so we were there at that game. And one of the points that Jen made to me was like, it's weird how few jerseys you see walking around in the hallways, like when you go to these games. Because we were there in like the not the lower bowl. I guess it's like the loge, right? The kind of middle area. And so when we would go to like the bar between quarters mm-hmm. or something like that, mm-hmm. She said like it's weird how few jerseys you see there compared to like when you go up to the 300 level. And the other comparison that we really made was the preseason game that we went to back in the day when they played at the Forum again. They played a game at the Forum, and it remains to this day my favorite viewing experience of any professional team. And at that Forum game, one of the things that happened was they opened mm-hmm. up the
Forum Club.
And again,
Forum Club? Was it called the
mom
Forum
and pop
Club?
Yeah. Vibes to it. We're sitting here in this bar. Bill Burka's over there. Mitch Kupchak walks by. Jim Buss is sitting there, like literally a seat away from me. And there's a great Jim Buss story that I can't tell on the air. There's that Joey and Jesse Buss are back there,
it is
and
a great
they're,
story,
and they're
yes.
like entertaining a group of people. Stu Lance walks in and he's talking with people, and everybody's just kind of interacting in this Forum Club, and you could just see the amount of gratitude on everybody's face who was sitting there, like, I can't believe I'm in this room right now. I can't believe, like, there was a spot where, like, it wasn't like marked off or anything like that, but people just like knew, oh yeah, that's the spot that Jack Nicholson would go and sit down at after games or like halftime and stuff. You like, you looked at that, and that's just a cool aspect of Lakers history that would, I think, I guess re-bolster is a decent word for it. Like, just get people back interested in the Lakers. And when you think about what the Lakers franchise has put their fans through the last like 7 years or so, I would do whatever I could. Like, think about a mom and pop shop that had 7 years as bad a 7 year run as the Lakers have had. They would be going out of their way like crazy trying to bring back customers, but the Lakers haven't. They've just kind of operated.
And that begs the question too, is like, can the Lakers be a mom and pop shop? Like, they're too big for that. What are the other places in really life, even outside mm-hmm. of sports? Like, what are the other examples? I think you've got a couple of NFL owners. I think the Rooneys, the Maras, where it's been in the family for decades. But those are teams. So the Giants, I think, are a disaster and have mm-hmm. been for a while. But like the Steelers, they've got good people
Bob
running
Kraft
the operations.
Is another example
at least.
Of like a single
so,
person owner who's like,
I don't want to get too out of my
has been
element
involved
here,
with it forever.
Yeah,
too.
Like, right. And so, you know, can the Lakers, those are probably the better examples of who the Lakers should be emulating than necessarily trying to, what are the versions of what they're trying to go for? What are the successful versions of that? And there is, some degree of a lack of leadership. We're speaking in very broad terms on the eve of what could be a very exciting season. I don't want to act like that's not not the case, but these are things that have kind of addled the Lakers during this last 7-year stretch that probably needs some reexamination. And like when it comes to Genie and just people in general, like I don't expect a zebra to be a lion or a tiger to be a gazelle. Like everybody's got their strengths and everybody's got their weaknesses, and how do you leverage them? And so my complaint is less that Genie isn't a completely different type of person than I wish he was. I wish that she really had more of her imprint on the type of person that she is, and that was more reflected in how the organization Genie to be,
and the Lakers reflected that person. Absolutely. That was therapeutic. Screw you, Doc Rivers. Just in general. That'll do it for this episode and this week's episodes of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Again, if you guys have any questions, any bets that you want Pete and I to consider, I have the board right behind me over there with the first one already up. The Dwight Howard bet is already up on the board. So get those in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes, and we will get to those, and we will read those off, and we'll figure out which bets, if there are any, make the most sense for us. Make them especially one-sided in Pete's. Make him tougher on Pete, preferably speaking.
Be like, we're going to need you to make 3 videos, and then Anthony has to wear a green shirt.
Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.